Welcome to the Touring for Purpose podcast. My name is Mingo, and this is actually part two of a two-part conversation with the millennial interview that we did. It's an incredible conversation with several young leaders from San Diego. If you want more information or you didn't catch part one, go back and catch the first recording. And in this one, we'll conclude the rest of that conversation. We'll talk to you guys soon. One of the things that's being like tossed around online right now, the question that's being asked is, or the statement that's being made is that millennials oftentimes want the platform without doing the hard work. And I don't know that I would, while I agree with that, I think that that's consistent with probably every generation. I think that because millennials seem to be like the hard one to crack, I think that everyone gets to say like they're the generation that doesn't want to do the work. But certainly I'm pretty sure that kids in the 80s didn't want to do the work, and kids in the 70s didn't want to do the work, and kids in the 60s were forced to do the work. So why do you think that is? I mean, are we going to answer and perpetuate a speculation? Or do you think that that's true of the generation at large? Do you think it's true of every generation? I'm sure that there are boomers who are watching right now who are like, well, we did the work.
My mom.
I know my mom's on
your
too.
Your mom's calling us out right
every
now.
Every mom is on here. Do I have a helicopter parent? OMG, right?
Exactly.
But here's the question is, like, what do we do with that? Like, what do we do with the statement that people think we want the platform, or we want the recognition, but we don't want to do the work? How do we bust that myth, if it in fact is a myth?
It's so funny because, like, our moms are watching and we're the ones that are on the camera, like, talking and stuff.
They're like, I don't know how to use technology. Oh, but you're saying something I don't agree with? Here we go. Here we go.
I would like to, like, take a jab at that. So I'm so millennial, I didn't even know I was a millennial until, like, a couple years ago. Like, so out of the loop with things. But to defend my fellow millennials, I would say that, you know, the internet is a huge thing right now. Media is a huge thing right now. And we just talked about this earlier. I used to be in broadcast journalism. Like, what we see online, what we see on media is pre-chosen, you know?
Like, it's baked. Somebody's using it for an agenda.
So what I think is that the people, the millennials who are in the spotlight, not wanting the attention, they're broadcasting themselves in that spotlight. Whereas there are millennials who are in the libraries right now studying.
Come on.
Or they're working extremely hard as a dishwasher to help pay for their family. They're not being seen because they're not out there on the internet. They're not out there wasting their time trying to project themselves under the spotlight.
That's really good, actually.
So I feel like maybe,
so the ones that actually aren't working are the ones that are finding themselves in public channels.
Yeah.
Doing stupid things. All the protesters. I think of this last election and all the like nonsense in every protest with a 22-year-old that was like, my country. And they're like, why are you even saying that?
Yeah.
Are you saying that behind them could be 1,000 other millennials in a library trying to figure out how to make the system better?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's because as you were speaking, I just started imagining my friends who are behind the scenes and they're handling their business because they don't have time to try and give themselves a spotlight. They have a family to provide for. They have a future to fight for because it's not like it's obvious. It's not easy for everyone to get a great job. And so there are people who are really fighting for it that are our age, and we don't see them.
Know, so off the back couch, any ideas coming to mind?
Got anything?
Okay. Oh.
Something that came to mind to me as we were talking about that was just how being on the platform, if you will, that doesn't always mean that you're not the backbone to whatever it is that's being brought into motion.
Right.
We did a series earlier this year, a women's series, and it was in the conference. It was a lot of work, you know, and we spoke a little bit and we taught a little bit, but at the end of the day, like, that was a platform, but we worked hard. I mean, it was every day, hours and hours of work. And sometimes with ministry, it's like, well, I want to be on stage, or I want to do this. I want to be on the platform, but it's like, I don't think that from the outside, others always realize like it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this question because I can help you articulate it maybe a little bit better. Yeah.
Thank you.
For every engagement you get with a microphone on a stage in front of people, what's the ratio to hours you're working off the stage? I mean, try to put it into like a numeric value.
Well, last year for the conference, it was probably what, like 4 hours?
I don't do numbers.
I don't know. It's tough.
And
it's
that's
the only hard and work.
And that's
I
a wrap, folks.
I mean, definitely. Like, I know for the series, it was probably about 4 or 5 hours a day for about three.
That's great. This is great. Yeah. Just
weeks
even
or so.
It.
I mean, it was, yeah, it was a lot in the conference. Yeah. I mean, we would spend all day together planning. We'd be at night getting tea at midnight, planning out how the schedule is going to go.
And like, I'm guessing your time on stage didn't run over an hour.
No. We didn't have time on stage.
To, yeah. I mean, for, I had, even like, for the one minutes. That we're working on right now, I remember I Sorry. Finished work. I worked from 10:30 to 7:30 at work, which is not that bad. But directly after that, I went over to Angie's house to write up the proposal. And maybe it's because I'm not that great at writing, but it took me from 8:30 to 3:30 a.m. to finish it.
But how many times did you get on Facebook during that time?
Maybe what? Seven. an hour.
I was on Facebook the whole time. That's
so
while
good.
He was doing
well,
it.
And let's just like we can just sum it up like this: that it might be 1/10 of the time that you are seen in the public spotlight. You're putting hours in behind that people don't see, yeah. People don't recognize, they don't understand. Even like doing this podcast, people don't realize. I mean, several hands involved in making it a reality, setting it up. The time it takes to coordinate everything, and then poof, here we are. And people are like, oh my gosh, I want to do a podcast. It's so awesome. It should be said over and over again in every single field that what you see as far as the highlight reel, and this is such a great lesson in social media also, is like people, they post the best and they just like deny the rest, right? They just do not show what the real involvement and investment looks like behind the scenes. There's no way to. Instead, you just see this highlight reel while you scrub through people's profiles of like all the best that they're doing. And I'll tell you what, it's probably made more insecurities in people than it has spurred people
yeah.
on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And one thing with that too is that I realized that, because coming into ministry, I did want, you know, some of the spotlight, you know, but I realized that as I worked harder and harder, the harder I worked, the more I wanted to give the spotlight to somebody else.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that's what comes with being in God's business, is that that's who he is. You know, he's willing to work behind the scenes for us, and ultimately he's getting the glory. But I think that's hard to get away with when you're working and serving Christ, is that you're not going to get all the spotlight all the time. And that's okay, because it's all about inspiring others and pushing them closer to their dreams as well.
I kind of have beef sometimes with the church because for some reason I feel like we hold it like a carrot. Like, you can be famous too, right? You can sing a song too. You can lead a workshop too. And I think of Jesus and everything he said to his disciples was like, it's going to cost you your life, right? From follow me to like go, come and die. That was like it. And so like that commission translated thousands of years into today's church is like, hey, if you're good enough, you can sing a song, right? And if like if the lead pastor is out and the backup preacher is gone and we couldn't source a guest speaker, then you can speak, right? And it's like, why do I have a hunger for that when I know at the end of the day my job is really to live a life illuminated for the purpose of Jesus, chasing after the least of these in the most marginal places? You know, that's my preaching soapbox, so I don't get to preach anymore. Tell me this. I want to ask this question. How do you like to receive feedback? This is probably going to unlock a ton of mystery for people as they try to figure out how to lead this generation well. How, if you're doing a great job, how do you receive feedback? And then I'm going to ask you, if you're doing a terrible job, how do you want to receive feedback?
I think that
he's a crockpot thinker. You know, we're just gonna let that let it simmer. Yeah.
Jinx, you owe me a soda. I think it's different for every person.
But I'm asking you specifically.
Yeah, and for me specifically, I like direct feedback.
Direct feedback, honest.
Direct, honest feedback, and it doesn't even have to have a side of, but you're really good at this. because it makes me feel like, okay, well, I'm good at.
You don't need the encouragement sandwich is what you're saying.
No. I just can you tell me so I can get better at it? What's frustrated me the most, I think, is when I don't get feedback.
Okay.
And then I receive the consequences of not getting better.
Oh, come on.
And I've had that happen to me. And it was the most like, hey, you've been doing this and this is the consequence of it now. I was like, wait, you couldn't have told me that like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm good at adjusting. Like I can adjust, I can move, I can. And I think it might have been even the stipulation that young people can't take feedback well. Let me tiptoe around them. Good job, pat on the
back.
Right. But sometimes that doesn't necessarily work out because you find yourself thinking that you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you're not.
You're not, because nobody was honest with you up front. Ange, I see you're spinning gears in here. That or you're just like looking up, you're totally disengaged. No. Do you have a thought?
Yeah.
How do you like to receive feedback?
I was just thinking intensely of like my mom, and I know she's watching this.
Man, she already knows this. Like her fingers are just getting ready to like hammer it out.
You know, like my mom always wants the best for me, and by her showing that is her telling me.
We're still trying to get Angela to go to college, P.S. We're still trying. We're still working on that.
Project college.
It's her telling me like more of what I need to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that conditioned me to become a person where it's like, tell me what I'm doing right, you know? So that's, for me, I'm, as much as I would like to say that I don't need encouragement, but I do, I like to receive encouragement, like, here's what you're doing right, but here's what can be better. But I honestly love feedback. I love criticism. I love it. I've learned to love it because it's what helps you become a better person. So if I were to say, don't give me feedback, that's me saying I want to stay in the same place and I want to never grow. So I do love it, but I also appreciate it so much more when someone's also able to encourage me.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I do as a person is because I feel like someone receives it better when you package it with encouragement on the side as well.
Yeah. I've heard arguments both sides. I think like with you being marked as a believer, you should always be encouraging. You should always be uplifting. That doesn't mean that you dodge hard truths that need to come out.
Yeah.
Sometimes the encouragement sandwich though derails you from the bottom line, which is like, Josh, you got to start working on this. And sometimes we feel like we call it the last 10%, right? We can get the 90% of the issue up onto the table and to the surface, but that last 10% is the hardest thing to say. And oftentimes if you're a people pleaser like me, you choose not to lay out the last 10%, but sometimes that is the most effective and the most critical piece of information to really alter that person's whatever actions, behaviors, response, whatever. I haven't settled on it yet. I don't know if the encouragement sandwich is the best way to go about it or if it's just like, hey, here's the truth. I love you. Certainly if we were involved in each other's lives on a consistent basis, I could be honest and upfront with you. And you wouldn't think that we had just derailed our whole friendship and everything that we had just gone through, you know?
One thing my mom always said is that ruins from a friend are better than kisses from the enemy.
Yeah, come on, that's from the Bible, yo.
So that's why I'm like, all right, mom.
My mom wrote truth without the lollipop. Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Here's a lollipop, you suck at your job.
You painted that terribly. Here's a lollipop. Nolan online also, shout out to Nolan, dude, because he's a fellow millennial. He's a financial analyst. Hello. Come on. That's an awesome job. He said this, that he thinks that there's a lot of millennials who are hardworking and were taught hardworking values. The problem now, though, versus previous generations is that millennials are in a world of information overload. So they get overwhelmed by the hundreds of different recipes for success and don't take action because of it. We were talking about that earlier, right? The analysis paralysis. I don't think that that's restricted to just a single generation, though. I think that people who have access to data, who are trying to make the best decision, oftentimes are paralyzed because they don't want to make the wrong decision. And I think that we might be seeing it in a wrong way, especially as entrepreneurs. Oftentimes we're wrestling with what's better versus best, not what we mistake it for, what's right and what's wrong. I think that if you're doing something great that's going to be lifting people and pushing people forward, it's not right and wrong. I think you need to figure out what you can settle for what's good and execute good. You need to wait for the opportunities that are requiring the best and push and reserve the best for the best. And I think you just run. I think you take it. I have a friend of mine, Steven, he said, just ship it, man. Wait, don't wait till it's perfect. Just run it. And that was something that I think is necessary for us to release, is the idea that things have to be perfect before they go live.
Yeah.
Certainly this podcast is a testament to that. but it's necessary, right? I think that we need to set people free from the false reality of perfection.
Absolutely.
Because there are no perfect things.
Yeah.
Right? There is nothing that is ever going to be perfect minus Jesus himself.
Yeah.
Jesus juke.
I think that's like shifting the perspective that mistakes are bad.
Yeah, so good.
Because I was actually listening to a podcast from Pastor Rick Warren from like literally 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said, if my staff aren't making mistakes, then we're not doing something right.
That's good. That's really
good.
And
I was like, that's so true, you know? And it's not being afraid of mistakes, but almost like embracing.
Totally.
And, you know, lifting off from your mistakes.
It's only championed when there's an absence of fear. So if you're in a culture where failure results in repercussions, the middle player in that is fear. You don't want the repercussions, so you never risk big in order to avoid fear, right? Because repercussions aren't that bad. It was always the fear of what the repercussion was going to be that really plagued me. You know, it was typically when you experience the repercussion, you're like, oh, it wasn't really that bad. You ever feel that way? You're like, oh,
yeah.
That slap on the wrist wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Therefore, you don't fear the repercussions. Therefore, you risk more, right?
Yeah.
Those are problem children, but also great leaders at the end of the day. Answer this question for me as we round out our podcast. What is the most important thing to you in a leader? I'm going to give you options. You tell me which one you like most, okay? The most important thing to you in a leader. Is it honesty? Is it vision? Is it confidence? Or is it patience? Why? Honesty, vision, confidence, or patience?
If they have one, are they not allowed to have any of the others?
No, it's just a matter of what you would put at the front of the list. What's the most important thing to you in a leader? Not as a leader, but in one. You're submitting yourself to somebody's vision, business, ministry. What's the most important thing to you? Is it that they have great vision? Is it that they're really honest with you, that they give you access to them and they're cutting it straight with you? It's right here. Is it their confidence that even if you don't know what's happening, you believe that they're going to make it? Or is it their patience that they give you chance to formulate your ideas and pace with the team and belong?
Yeah. The first thing I thought of was honesty. I don't know why.
Probably because that's the number one answer amongst millennials.
Yeah.
Yeah, honesty really is.
I was looking at like, well, what can be learned? And like, what are some things that like, you know?
Honesty, along with honesty, is transparency. Mm-hmm. So you're probably valuing somebody who's willing to show you the entire process or the entire organization, not just your little sliver of it,
mm-hmm.
but say, here's the bigger picture.
Yeah.
I want you to get a look at that. Anybody have another answer that they thought was like valuable?
I think for me, vision is really important,
mm-hmm.
Because I really want to feel like I'm going somewhere.
Yeah, it's good.
I want to feel like there's movement. If I feel stagnant, I start to get really anxious.
Yeah.
If I feel like there's no momentum, I start to get really anxious. So if there's a leader that can direct in a way and say, okay, here's where we're going.
Yeah.
Here's your part in it. I really agree with the honesty thing.
Like, I'm just going to default back to the honesty.
Because if you say, hey, here's what we're doing. And I'm like, who are you?
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
That's my first question.
Yeah.
But I do want to know, okay, where are we going?
What's up, Alexa? Join the conversation. Alexa Thomas.
Alexa Thomas.
Okay, good. Any other? I think everybody's going to, you guys are in agreement with that honesty is one of the higher values amongst leadership for people who are leading you. You want to be brought into the whole conversation.
So I definitely agree. Honesty is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
However, I liked the idea of vision more.
Okay.
I think like I want vision to be the number one thing. I feel like I'm very passionate about having a vision. It says in the Bible, without vision, my people perish. Mm-hmm. And when you think of vision, it's like, you know where you're going. So if an airplane is flying and they're just 1 degree off, they're going to end up thousands of miles totally, in a different time. Direction.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So I want to know that they have vision they have before vision. Anything else.
That's really
think,
good.
So.
That's super good.
Ready?
Rudy, I love Rudy's just been the silent Rudy. Force back there. He's just always, the I'm silent always, force.
Background person. For me, it would obviously be honesty.
Yeah.
And also patience. Because especially for like our parents and peers, they're always like, I feel like we as millennials, we're kind of expected to like, okay, so you graduated high school, mm-hmm. go to college,
yeah.
go to college, get a job, get your degree, do this, do that. And it's like, okay, wait, there's a whole lot of like little things in between of that. And then personally for me, it's, I tend to take on a lot of responsibility
uh-huh.
because, that's just who I am and I know I could do it. And, but then at the same time, it's like, I want to try to perfect this. So give me some time. Like, I promise I'll get it and it's going to be like great. We're going to create a system on this, but like, I
so
need time.
Time yeah, is good. Time to,
yeah.
time to become.
Yeah.
This is going to be my last question. Maybe I ask two more. What do you tell the senior leader as you are operating within your ministry or your organization? If you could have a candid one statement to him on behalf of all millennials, on behalf of all young adults, what do you tell a senior leader? Somebody who is either going to be your boss or somebody who's going to be your ministry leader or maybe your senior pastor. This is your chance to speak your piece about the places that you give the most of your time to.
Give me a raise.
Ah, yes. Finances.
He looks in the camera.
Chuck, do you hear that? Okay. What do you tell? What do you tell the senior leader? What do you tell the people that are currently leading? Let's narrow it to the church. And what do you want? What would you want to say to them on behalf of the generation that's like at risk? Right now, the millennial generation is at risk. Are they going to adopt and become the next generation church? Or are we going to see a whole nother version of it because they're not getting it right?
I think that I would say in this case, like in the space that we're in, even sometimes at our own churches, that very thing, we don't know exactly what to do with you. And I'd say, hey, we don't actually know what to do with ourselves all the time either. We're figuring out who we are, and we need some people to really come alongside us and figure that out with us.
That's good.
Some with vision, with honesty, with communicate, with transparency, with all of that.
That's good.
And lead us well.
That's great.
Even if you have to tell some of us, like, hey, let me lead you. Like, even if you have to tell some of us, it's time for you to learn, maybe open your ears a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
time to get the hard work done. I think that sometimes it's just so distant, that word. I'm over here with my group of millennials and we're all feeding off of each other, and there's an yeah. old person yeah. across the way. They're like, hey, you need to work harder, and yeah. all my friends are but they won't come over and stand and have the conversation.
So
with them
good. Did you hear that, Tommy Mosley? Did you hear that, Tommy Mosley?
No, I totally agree with that. There's a pastor, he's our kids pastor in the church, and he's telling me that all the time. And like, I want to, like, I agree with him. He's like, you guys should be leading the youth. You should be leading kids, mm-hmm, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like, there's that lack of someone coming alongside and being like, so let me lead you.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a big thing that's missing, is someone that is willing to come alongside you and lead you. And then also something that I would like to say, me and Rudy talked about this, because Rudy was telling me that he feels like he's finally stepped into his purpose and his giftings because someone believed in him.
Yeah.
And some people, and maybe for some like our generation, have never had someone believe in them because they already deem them as someone that isn't a hard worker.
Hmm.
You know, so it's like, you know, give us a chance. You can believe in us and you can trust in us, and we're going to make mistakes just like you probably did along the way. But let's partner.
I think that it's got to be a faster baton pass. And I think that we have to have more trust. And then we need to stop building empires, and we need to start leaning into kingdoms, right? We had that conversation earlier. Less about any one particular person in a very decentralized church needs to come to the surface. Something that is led by many, that's influenced by many, And has a ton of incredible leaders below the surface that people don't see or can identify, but feel the effects of. I'm praying that that is really going to be the stamp of our generation. So I love you. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.